Well, good afternoon, everyone.
4 years.
And thank you for inviting me to this special monthly meal that you have. We have a seniors group at our church. They're called the Silver Threads. They don't have as good as food as you guys. But I just want you to know that, okay? So they might be jealous when I tell them what I had to eat over here. When John was telling that story in the devotion about the dead church comment, it reminded me of a situation that actually happened to me here in Regina. In those days, there was a Christian book and music store that was sort of on North Albert. I don't know if anyone remembers that. I think it was called Western Book and Stationery. I think that's what it was called. Yeah. Anyways, I was up there one day, and I was going through the music section because I enjoyed looking at, you know, what the new releases were and all that kind of stuff. And there was a student there from a Canadian Bible College, and we got talking about, you know, music groups we liked and everything. And then I found out that he didn't have a ride back to Canadian Bible College. So I said, "Well, I'm going that way. I'll give you a ride." So as we're driving back, he says, "Well, what do you do?" And I said, "Well, I'm a pastor at one of the churches in town here." Oh, what church is that? I said, "Well, it's Christ Lutheran Church." "Oh, one of the dead ones." And I thought to myself, I'm giving you a ride, buddy. We were in the Christian bookstore. We were talking music, and you just instantly, you know. So I just kept my mouth shut and took him back. But I thought, you know, we make these assumptions about other people and other circumstances without really knowing what we're talking about. And that's, I guess that's human nature. Well, what I'm going to talk about today is something I know well because it's about me. I'm going to kind of give you a little bit of my life story and indicate sort of what I think is a common theme throughout it. And that common theme is creativity. And I want to begin by saying that the beginning of the Bible, the book of Genesis, tells us an extraordinary thing. And that extraordinary thing is that we are made in the image of God. And what does that mean? I think there's a lot of different levels to it. But one of the parts of it is that I believe it means that we are made to be creative. Now, you might not think of yourself as a creative person, but if you have a conversation with someone, you are being creative. You're putting words and phrases together in a unique way to be able to express something to someone else. If you cook meals and you make variations on the meals and you just kind of come up with these out of your head, and I bet you there's a lot of you out there who have recipes that you could never pass on to your family because they're all in your head and you just kind of made it up, right? Well, that's being creative too. A lot of times I think people think creativity just has to do with the arts, but I believe it has to do with all kinds of aspects of life. Well, what is my life? My life started off in Brooks, Alberta. How many of you know where Brooks, Alberta is? How many of you associate Brooks, Alberta with a terrible smell? Yes, yeah. People would say, "How could you stand living there? That terrible smell." And I had to explain that, well, the feedlot, which is what causes the smell, the feedlot is on the very north side of town, and the prevailing winds are from the southwest. So we very seldom got the smell in town. But when we did, it was awful, and I would complain, and my parents would say, "That's the million-dollar smell, Dennis." Because the feedlot employed a lot of people and whatnot. Brooks is in the heart of oil and irrigation country, and I would not necessarily call it, you know, a hotbed of culture. It really wasn't. But I was fortunate enough to have some music teachers when I was growing up who instilled in me a love of music. Perhaps more significant than the teachers I had were the family I came from. So I come from a family that had both faith and music as a big part of their lives. So in my family, for example, we had organists. Both my grandmother and my great aunt were the church organists. And we had choir directors, and we had parish workers, and we had pastors. So lots of people of faith and lots of musical stuff. So going back on both sides of my family, you know, my mom likes to tell the story that her great her grandfather played for the King of Norway, played accordion for the King of Norway at one point, and that her grandmother was a music teacher back in Norway, and so on and so forth. So music was a big part of our life. My mom was a nurse, and to me, when I think of nurses, I think of people who are healers and helpers, you know, like that. This is what they do. And my dad was an electronics technician, repaired radios, stereos, appliances, and so on and so forth. And when I think of electronic technicians, I think of fixers and inventors. And my dad was actually quite good at stuff. He could figure out a problem and make it work, sometimes using parts borrowed from other places and stuff like that. Like, he was very creative that way. So when I think of myself as a pastor, I think that really it was the ground I grew in, so to speak, that led me to this path being a very natural one. It never seemed foreign to me that this would be a concept that I could become a pastor. So I had all these things, you know, but the one thing I wasn't sure about when I was a teenager was whether or not I was a leader. And the reason for that is because I'm born later in the year. I'm born in October, and my parents didn't hold me back. So I was with all my friends who were older than me. And in fact, some of them were like 1 or 2 years older. So I was always the follower as a young person. The first chance I got to be a leader was at a church camp, and I was a counselor. And at this camp, they had this tradition that on Wednesdays, they would lead the campers on a hike to the haunted sauna. Now, the haunted sauna was just this name we had for this old log sauna that some Dane had built many, many years before, and it kind of, you know, through misuse had fallen into disrepair. But, you know, we would lead the kids there and try and scare them and stuff like that. Usually what we did is we had one of the counselors would hide up in the rafters, and we'd bring the group in, and then they'd fall down, and then the kids would scream, and we'd all have a good time, right? My job was to lead the kids around the perimeter of the camp and get them to the sauna. So it's starting off good, and I'm feeling good about my leadership capabilities because the kids are following and everything is going the way it's supposed to, right? And then one of the kids says, "What's that?" And they point out into the field. So we had woods on one side and the field on the other. And out in the field, I see this indentation in a circle, right? And it's about a little bit bigger than the tables there. So maybe about 10 feet in diameter, something like that. And I have no clue. What I'm thinking is, what could possibly make that? And I thought, well, maybe it's like some wild animal rolling around, you know, but why would they roll around like that? And then I'm thinking maybe they're rabid, you know, and then it's like, so now I'm starting to get worried, and I just make up a story and say, well, that's just, I forget even what I said. But do you realize what I've seen? I saw an actual crop circle. And let me tell you my theory about them. I think crop circles, at least ones like this, are formed by weather, and primarily by lightning and or thunderstorms. And in that region, we had a lot of that activity, a lot of thunderstorms, a lot of tornadoes and whatnot. That's my theory. But none of us knew, but I had to pretend I knew. See, that was... Do you realize that what leaders do, right? Leaders pretend they know what they're doing. Yeah, so I passed that test. And we keep walking, one of the girls then screams, and then it's, now what? And I turn around, and then there's this girl lying flat on the ground. And then her friends are saying, oh, she forgot to take her meds. And it's like, oh my goodness. What? Now, like, I'm not a person with medical knowledge. I don't know what to do. And this person is lying there, and then she finally kind of gets up, and someone says, well, I'll run and get her meds. So this boy, who wants to be, you know, the knight in shining armor, he runs back to the camp to get her meds. And so we're waiting for the meds to come back. And then we see the boy running, and he says, the cavalry to the rescue. And as soon as he says that, he disappears. He's just gone. And then everyone, like, takes a collective gasp and wondering what is happening here. And I'm thinking, we're not supposed to be scared yet. We're not even at the sauna. What's going on? Then we hear this groan. Oh, So then I kind of make my way over, and turns out he had run into an abandoned basement. There had been a farm hole there, a farmhouse, and but the house was gone and the basement was still there. He didn't realize it, ran right into it, dropped into it, hurt his ankle, and was like, oh. Anyways, by this time, I realize our time is up. We're supposed to be back to camp for the next activity, so I lead the kids back to the camp. Meanwhile, the counselor is still waiting in the rafters in the sauna. He doesn't know what to do. I feel like a total failure. This is what you need to know about this story, okay? I feel like a total failure. Everything went wrong. I'm not a good leader. And then it was time where the counselors had about a half hour where they were given free time before having to put the kids to bed. And what was happening is the kids were having hot chocolate and cinnamon buns. And I went with another counselor down a secret path we had to a little spot on the lake shore where only the counselors knew about it. And it was not very big, but enough for a couple of people to sit down. And as I sat down, we sat down, this is what I saw. There was no wind at all, so the lake was pure glass, right? Off to my left, which is in the west, is the remnants of a beautiful sunset. So the colors in the skies are reds and purples, and it's just gorgeous, right? And so this is reflecting in the lake. And then for the first time in my life, straight ahead of me, what I see is northern lights. And the northern lights are dancing down and touch the horizon and are reflected in the water. And I just feel myself being filled with peace. And then it's almost like a message comes from God. And what God is saying to me is this: it's okay, Dennis. It's okay. I'm here. Be at peace. You're not a failure, right? That stuck with me to this very day. I can still envision that scene very, very clearly. And to this day, if I see northern lights, to me it's almost like a sign that God is saying, it's okay, I'm here, and you're not a failure, right? So that enabled me to then pursue my idea of becoming a pastor, that I could do this. And so I went off to university. In the Lutheran church, we're required to get a bachelor's degree first before you enter seminary. So I got a bachelor's degree in just a BA, majoring in music and minoring in psychology, which was an interesting combination, actually. It's sort of the artsy side and the science side. I kind of liked it. And when I was in college, my musical vocabulary was greatly expanded. It was in college that I ran into some other guys who liked jazz music and formed my first jazz group. And they played a bunch of my compositions, which was really fun, because playing my compositions on my own was one thing, but to play them in a group context suddenly gave them new life. And then in jazz, of course, what happens is that the players have the freedom to add stuff as they are so inspired. And then it sort of becomes a collective effort. And so something becomes greater than you could ever imagine, because these other people are adding in their ideas and taking it in a new direction. And so that happened in college. And then I went off to seminary. I took my seminary in Saskatoon. And I went to seminary in spite of the fact that at this point I had either dropped out or failed Greek 3 times. And it was a requirement to have Greek, right? So I went there anyways. And by the way, I finally got it on my 4th attempt. I finally managed to pass Greek, never to use it again. But that's... what happened at seminary is the librarian there found out that I liked music and choir singing and so on. She said, you should sing in the Greystone Singers. How many of you know of the Greystone Singers? Okay, so this is the audition choir for the University of Saskatchewan. And in those days, they allowed seminary students to, so there was a few who had done that. And so I went over, the choir had already started, went over and auditioned for Bob Solem. And he said, sure, yeah, we'd like to have you come sing in the bass section. So that's what I did. And the benefit of that is that at one point, Bob Solem put us in mixed formation. So mixed formation means that instead of all the basses standing together, all the altos standing together, so that now you're sort of mixed and you're beside different parts, right? And he put us into mixed formation based on height. And so I was found myself sitting beside a tall Alto, okay, who was very quiet and who I hadn't really noticed much before. But then sitting beside her, you know, we started talking a little bit in between rehearsal stuff. And I said, oh, this is a really nice person. And she had an awesome voice. She was a great singer. And then I found out that her dad was a Lutheran pastor. So we had stuff in common. And you know, we got talking more and more. And before you know it, she's my wife. That's how it worked, you know. So I thank Bob Solem for putting us in mixed formation because it led me to my wife. I came from Alberta, but once I moved to Saskatchewan, like to seminary, I have never left Saskatchewan. I'm one of the few people who migrated this way. Instead of, you know, like, you know, remember in the 80s when all the people were going to Alberta to work? I was coming here because I recognized a good province when I saw it. Yeah. I actually believe that. I'm really glad that I live in Saskatchewan because Alberta is, I don't know, they're crazy sometimes. I'll just put it that way. So I interned in Weyburn. That's where I interned. And when I was in Weyburn, Beth and I were engaged. That's her name, my wife's name, Beth. She was living in Saskatoon still. So if I wanted to go visit her, I had to drive through Regina. Now, in those days, they didn't have the Louvan. So to get through Regina, you had to go up Albert Street, right? That took a long time. And I was irritated at Regina for keeping me from my fiancé. And it seemed to me every time I drove through Regina, the wind was whipping from the west and it was a dusty storm and it was terrible. So that led me to be a little suspicious of this city. So much so that when we were at seminary my last year, a bunch of us were sitting around and talking about where we might like our first call. And I said, oh, I don't know. I said, anywhere in Western Canada would be fine, or urban or rural. I'd be content to go anywhere. Well, except Regina. I wouldn't want to go to Regina. I literally said this. And it's almost like God was listening and said, oh, have I got a surprise for you. So then I ended up with a call to Christ Lutheran fresh out of seminary. And I thought, really? Regina? And once I moved here, then I realized, well, what makes Regina special is the people. And there's a lot of wonderful people here. So much so that I am still here after 32 years. It's almost 32 years. In March it'll be 32 years at the same congregation in the same city. This is very, very unusual for Lutheran pastors who usually move on average about every 8 to 10 years. But I'm still here because of the congregation I serve, which is a wonderful congregation, because of the connection with Luther College. So Christ Lutheran, by the way, grew out of Luther College. I don't know if you knew that, but initially the church met in the chapel at Luther College and then eventually built its own building. And I began teaching there in 1991, grade 11 Christian Ethics. And I've been teaching that ever since. And I actually still enjoy teaching that class. That's why I'm still doing it. I just gave them their final exam today, the most recent class. And what really makes me filled with delight is when students take interest in the subject of Christianity. And one of my greatest challenges is to try and help students who may have little experience with Christianity to have a deeper understanding of what it is and to have a positive understanding of what it is. Because we all know that in the media, the way the church is most often portrayed is in negative terms. When something bad happens, when some kind of scandal happens, right? That's how the church is presented in the media. And I want them to see that Christianity has a lot of positive things. Yes, we have some warts, that's true, and we need to acknowledge those. But what we have is a precious gift for the world and needs to be shared. So that's why I still do that. All right, so music has always... How am I doing? The problem is you ask the preacher to come and talk to you. You realize that, don't you? Okay, all right, I'm doing okay. So creativity I believe is an aspect of life made in the image of God. And so music is a big part of the way I do that, but also I enjoy other creative ventures. Photography is one of the things that I've been doing since I was in high school. I do some creative writing and poetry and stuff like that. And I actually have started to make food, but I try and come up with weird dishes, which my family sometimes likes and sometimes just says, "Dad, don't ever make this again." Okay, but you know, try and be creative in all kinds of ways. But music is probably what I'm most known for in the wider community. And when I was still at seminary in 1985, I formed a little company called Aurora Productions. And Aurora Productions I formed to promote creative expression of Christian life and faith through music and word and visual image. So all the areas that I was interested in. And so over the years, I've produced a number of different things, kind of as a sideline thing to my main ministry. And I brought some of them here, and I'll just show you a few of them. Have you had David Kaiser speak yet? No, not yet. But you were trying to get him. Okay. Anyways, David Kaiser and I have put together three books like this. This is the third in the volumes, and it's called Dramatic Readings for the People of God. And so these are things that would be used in worship settings, you know, on Sunday mornings, and they're based on the lectionary readings. That's how you can kind of find them. So there's all kinds of things. There's monologues in here. There's dialogues. There's even a choral reading. There's all kinds of stuff that and so you know, I became a publisher, so to speak, and I published this plus some other books by David, some of his poetry books, and I did that because no one else was publishing those kinds of things at that time, right? And when I was in high school, I was the editor of the yearbook, and that gave me the skills to know how to do layout and design and put stuff together. It's funny how all these things that you do when you're a teenager show up later in life in surprising ways, eh? So who would have thought that being the editor of the yearbook would lead itself to publishing books? So this is one of the books that we published. Well, actually, it's the most recent book we've published. So I also composed music, and the biggest work I've ever composed was an Easter cantata called And Jesus Said. And Orville Kaminsky, who was the lead pastor at Christ Lutheran when I first came there 32 years ago, he worked on the words for this, the text for it, and I put the music together. We've presented this cantata twice, and we're doing it again this year. And the thing that I'm looking forward to is that this year, my son Joshua is going to sing the lead part, the part of Jesus. And that's kind of just a neat little thing for a dad to be able to watch his own son sing. And so we're putting this together this year. And Luther College is going to help out. Some of the students from Luther College are going to sing in the choir, and some of the musicians are going to play on the ensemble. So this is an example of my written compositions work. But probably the most of what I have done is produce recordings. And some of the recordings are my own stuff, and some of the recordings are other people's stuff. So I'll start with other people. So any of you here heard of Jennifer Jade Kerr? Any of you heard of her? She's a singer-songwriter from Regina, a Christian singer-songwriter, who wrote amazing songs. And when I first heard her, I said, "You need to record those." And she said, "Well, I don't know how." I said, "Well, I'll help you, Hal. You know, I'll help you do it." And so then we came up with this album that we put out a number of years ago. She's since recorded another album in Calgary, but this first one was done in the basement of our church. That's where we recorded it. But I think it sounds like it wasn't recorded in the basement of a church. Like, I think it sounds pretty good. My wife sings in a women's vocal quartet called Grace Notes. And I've recorded two of their recordings, for example. So this is just a collection of spiritual songs. And this is Christmas songs. And so that was recorded. And the very last thing I've recorded lots of choirs. So choirs like connected with the Saskatchewan Choral Federation, their teen camps and stuff like that. Luther College choirs, Luther Bach choirs, Prairie Chamber Choir. I've done a lot of choir recording over the years, and then I've put some of those recordings into CDs and or tapes. This is the last thing I did of my own. It's called Dreams and Visions. It's a major concept album. Do you know what I mean by a concept album? That means that there is a concept that runs through the whole of it, okay? And I put it together with poetry and quotes from literary figures and scriptures and photography. It's all kind of a big thing that tells a big story. The music in it is kind of like my life. It's just really varied. So you've got everything from stuff that would be, I don't know, when people ask me, what is it like? Well, it's ambient funk, jazz, classical folk rock music. Or as I say, it's just me. It's my music, right? Some people have said that what this is like a soundtrack to a movie that has yet to be made. And the movie is the story of scriptures. So the first song is about the book of Genesis, or essentially about creation, and the last song is about the new creation. And and in the middle you get the story of Jesus, but it's all done instrumentally. So that's just some examples of some of the stuff I've done. I brought along, in case anyone wanted to see, some of my photography in the form of a calendar. That was the easiest thing to grab. This particular calendar, the one that I just put out, I give this to my staff at Christ Lutheran. This is what they get for Christmas. They now know every year, oh, we're going to get a calendar with pictures. That's it's no big surprise there. But this one comes from the tour that my wife and I led this last summer to Europe. We called it In the Footsteps of Luther. So you know that Luther and the Protestant Reformation celebrated its 500th anniversary. Did you know that? Just in October? It's been 500 years since Luther posted the 95 Theses, which started the Reformation. And so we visited all these different sites, starting in Rome and then ending up in the northern part of Germany where Luther spent most of his time, including Wittenberg and Eisenach. In Eisenach, by the way, you also you get Bach, because Bach was born in Eisenach. So there's Bach stuff there and there's Luther stuff there. It was great. All right, I think I need to play you some music. So I'm going to play you an example of a song that I wrote for my wife. This is how I convinced her to marry me. I proposed to her, this is the truth, I proposed to her in the parking lot of the church in Brooks. And what I did is I pulled out this cassette tape. This is so geeky, it's silly. I pulled out this cassette tape and I gave it to her and I said, here, you need to play this. And there was this song. I said, this song I wrote for you. And then I pulled out a poster of a painting by Maxfield Parrish. Do any of you know Maxfield Parrish, the American artist? Anyways, he has a color of blue named after him because he used this particular blue all the time in the horizon of his paintings in the sky. So I wrote this song called Two Lights in a Parish Blue Sky, and there's puns in there, and there's all kinds of imagery. And then the last thing, I did give her a ring, in case you were worried that I didn't give her. I gave her a ring. But this is the piece I wrote for her, and then I've played it ever since. We play it all the time. So this is, I'll give you a very short version of Two Lights in a Parish Blue Sky. Thank you. Well, thank you. She thought it was good enough. Anyway, she married me, so it's good. I brought along, do any of you still have a cassette player? No one has a cassette? Okay, so here's the deal. I'm giving you free cassettes for anyone who has a cassette player or just wants to take one. And there are a couple of variations of Two Lights in a Parish Blue Sky in this cassette. So everyone can take one of these because I'm trying to clear them out of my house. Okay. So you can all take one of those. They're all in the basement. That's exactly where they are. Just a few other things that I've done that are sort of creative and different. When I was at seminary, I met another pastor, we weren't pastors yet, but we became pastors, who really liked jazz music, and we got talking one day about jazz liturgies. And I don't know if you know this, but there were some famous jazz musicians who wrote music for churches. Duke Ellington wrote what we call the Sacred Concert series, and he considered it his most important work. And he did three of them. That's probably the most famous name. But how many of you know the name Vince Guaraldi? Yeah, Charlie Brown music. So all the early Charlie Brown TV specials? It was Vince Guaraldi was the one who wrote all that music. He also was commissioned by Grace Cathedral in San Francisco, an Episcopalian church, to write a jazz liturgy. And so we were talking about this, and we thought, well, maybe we could come up with something. So we made it a seminary project, and we wrote a jazz liturgy. So what we did is we took all the music that normally is sung in the liturgy in the Lutheran church and we set it to jazz idioms instead of the sort of the more classical idioms. And it was well received and in fact is still used to this very day. We just had a church in South Carolina contact us and ask if they could have the music for it because they'd like to use it down there. And I use it probably two or three times a year at Christ Lutheran. But that's a little unusual. It got me a little bit of fame. Some people thought that it was the worst thing in the world to put jazz and, but you know, really music in and of itself is neither evil nor good. It's how you use it, right? And so, you know, in the early days when contemporary Christian music first came out and everyone said, oh, that's of the devil. Do you remember that stuff? Maybe you don't remember. I remember it because that's what they would say to me when I wanted to play that stuff. It's of the devil. And then I realized, no, you know, actually, you can pick any style of music and find stuff that is edifying and faith building or stuff that is degenerative and leads you away from a life of faith. So I wasn't convinced that a style of music in and of itself was the problem. So I did something heretical, in a sense. And I took Martin Luther. Did you know that the reason you sing hymns on Sunday morning is because of Martin Luther? Did you know that? I mean, up to that point, the music in the church was sung basically by professional choirs, and the congregation never sang. And Luther said, no, he was a musician and a composer, and he says, no, I want people to sing, and this is a way to teach them, because of course not many were literate in those days, but they, you know how, you probably, this probably still happens to you. You hear a song on the radio that you haven't heard for maybe decades, and you can sing all the words. Has this happened to you? Yeah, so I think Luther was onto something there. He said, yeah, we're gonna have congregational singing. His most famous hymn is, what do you think? A Mighty Fortress. So I took A Mighty Fortress, and Luther used the modern music of his time. He used the music, the folk music, some people say the pub music, that was around, and he that's what he set his words to. So I said, okay, I'm going to take his famous tune and I'm going to change it a little bit and put it in the jazz idiom. So I did that by making it from a major key into what's called the Dorian mode, and then I just put a walking bass line underneath. I'll give you a little sample of it. I call it A Wild Boar in the Vineyard. Do you have any idea why that? Because when Luther was first making a commotion, at one point, the Pope at the time wrote a thing and said, Lord, there is a wild boar loose in your vineyard, and you must get him out. So Luther was known as the wild boar. I thought, oh, that's not a bad thing, and you get stuff done anyways, and that's what Luther did. He got a lot of stuff done. So I'll give you a little taste of A Wild Boar in a Vineyard, okay? Just a little taste. Thank you. that's just a little sample of that. It's way better when you get a whole group. I'm going to leave you with a couple of poems I wrote, okay? Just so you can get a flavor of not just the music stuff that I'm trying to be creative with. And I'm going to start with a poem that I was very fortunate to have Madeleine L'Engle critique. Do any of you know the name Madeleine L'Engle? Wrinkle in Time is maybe her most famous book. She won a Newbery Award for that. I managed to attend a writer's workshop by Madeleine L'Engle, and there was about 80 people who took the workshop, and then there was a draw for 8 people to have their work critiqued by her, and I was selected in that draw. And one of the tasks she gave us is to write a poem in a certain style, and it was a sonnet. We had to use the sonnet form. So this is my sonnet called The Holy Mystery of Night. Okay. I watch the holy mystery of night for signs that love still dwells within our midst. With darkness round my soul, I seek your light and long to be embraced and spirit kissed. There was a time when love reflected all, the beauty of creation's certainty, when human ears responded to your call, and joy was theirs as full and wide the sea. Yet choices made to turn our backs on you have led to deep felt loneliness, and worse, we fill this world with bitterness and strife, and struggle with the earth, our ancient curse. Yet out of dust still comes the gift of life, and stars still shine in spite of all we've done. Your light surrounds us, good and gracious one. Good. And then the very last one is a free-form poem called Night Celebration. And this will tie in with what I said at the beginning. I think you'll see the tie-in. Night Celebration. Tonight I was covered with a blanket of sweeping light, colors, form, movement, silent in the night. Time for a time was gone. I remember what seems like yesterday, angels dancing in the sky. My thoughts are focused in one. I wonder what the heavens are trying to say. Caught up in the motion, my spirit begins to fly. Gently, the light disperses and the vision is done. Timelessness turns back into today. Yet something remains in my mind's eye. A scene of creation that sung celebration. Well, thank you very much for having me this afternoon, and God's blessings on you in the year 2018. May it be filled with joy and wonder.